Hello.
Hello. I'm Natalie.
And I'm Paul. Welcome to God Hates Fangs True Blood Podcast.
This week we will be discussing Season 3, Episode 5, Trouble.
Sounds good, sounds good. Okay, let's start off with our questions from listeners.
Our questions, again, all come from Idris. She's sent us some...
She's, our number one fan.
Yeah, thank you. question.
Okay, first question. If it is not too much of a spoiler, in the book... Why did Eric and his maker part?
Right, in the books, Godric is not Eric's maker. Eric's maker is a Roman. I can't remember his name. He's not dead in the books either.
Is Godric in the books?
Godric's in the books, but he's not. He dies in the same way that he does in the series. Eric's kind of different in the books in that he had a family. He had a wife and kids, as opposed to being a skirt-chasing... Viking like he's in the show, but then after he's made a vampire, him and his maker have like a homosexual relationship. To answer the question, I can't recall why they part, but I hope that gives you a bit of background information and you can see the contrast between how he is in the show and how he is in the books.
Okay, next question. Also, does it say how many children a vamp can make in an average vamp lifetime? The relationship is so strong and the connection so profound. How many of these relationships can a vamp have throughout their dead life?
That's interesting because, in the show, none of the vampires have got more than one child. But I know that in the book, Sophie Anne has quite a few children that are all sort of her followers. But... We've not seen any of her children in the show, unless Hadley is a vampire at that point that we saw her in season 2. But I think it was a bit ambiguous, wasn't it, whether Sookie's cousin was a vampire yet or not.
So the answer to that question is...
In the books, yes, you can have many
loads.
Children. Yeah.
Loads of children. Okay, could Eddington be older than Godric? Or perhaps just 1300 to 1500 years old? Does his name seem strange if he is so old? Where would that place him in the old world? Or is Russell Eddington his latest persona? Would that be part of the reason that he was so hard to trace as the leader of the werewolves?
Dennis O'Hare, who plays Russell, he's given a bit of background information in interviews, but I don't know that information will be given in the show. But from interviews, he said that Russell is the oldest vampire in the show. He is older than Godric. He's about 2,500 years old.
Wow, that's old.
Yeah.
He's old.
And he's a... I think he's a, like a Celtic druid. Or he was a Celtic druid. And he's... and obviously, Russell Edgerton is not his real name. So.
Will this come out in the TV programme?
I don't know, because he went into such detail about the background information in the interviews that I kind of thought maybe he's given that information to us through the interviews because it's not going to be given in the show.
Oh, nice.
Possibly, yeah. And I think... Talbot is a Byzantium prince, so they've been, and he's sort of maybe 400 or 500 years old, I think.
So quite young, really.
Yeah, in comparison.
A youngling.
Yeah, but they've been together for like 400 years, which is nice.
Well, that is it for questions from listeners, but if you've got any questions...
Send them in. Yeah, we're always willing to answer your questions on the show or the books.
Send them into the email address.
Yeah, godhatesfangs@hotmail.co.uk.
Okay, so should we start the episode recap?
Yeah.
Okay, Talbot bickers with Franklin over his arrival with Tara, who is doing a good job at staying calm despite the lunacy surrounding her.
Yeah, I don't know if she's been glamoured or if she's just playing it really cool, but yeah, good on you, Tara.
She does seem, she seems quite chilled out about it.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought she'd kind of be freaking out and swearing at them and stuff, but no, she's playing it cool.
So Talbot and Franklin are bickering, and just as they bare their fangs, Russell, Lorena and Bill return home all bloody from their stripper meal.
And did you notice that Lorena was carrying the stripper's bra? It's like a trophy.
Little keepsake.
Talbot called Franklin, I think this is what he called him.
He kind of mumbled it, or it sounded a bit foreign. Or
I think he said, fucking psycho fugly fug. I think that was...
Fucking psycho fugly fug.
That was, I think that was just the actual insult. Anyway, Tara is appalled that Bill refuses to help her and has apparently turned his back on his human life. Is this Bill just trying to...
Bill's just playing the game.
He's playing the game. He's trying to keep his cover, I think.
He's probably thinking that Tara, if she's kind of sacrificed for the cause, then it's fair enough.
He's willing to let Tara die if it keeps Sookie safe, I think.
Yes. Franklin delivers the file on Sookie that he stole from Bill, and Russell is pleased with the information.
He refuses to pay Franklin in cash in case he goes on another gambling and murder spree. We also learn that Tara is not the first girl that Franklin has become obsessed with. Oh dear.
Yeah, he sounds like he's had a few girls in the past.
Yeah, that have met unhappy endings.
The two of them ponder on why Bill would have a file on his human exploring her family tree. And Russell concludes that Sophie Ann is involved.
They can smell her perfume all over it. Lorena follows Bill to his room and asks to have weird hate sex again. But he refuses and calls her stupid and a tiresome cow.
Yeah, she's banging to the weird hate sex,
obviously,
isn't she?
That was a regular feature of their relationship back in the day.
It's kind of the have a fight and make up kind of...
But at the same time.
Kind of thing, yeah. Sookie and Alcide speed away from Lupine's, and he explains to her that the energy of the other werewolves changing was what caused him to almost shift.
Oh, that's good. We were right.
Yeah, we said that, didn't we?
We said that. We called that. And he also says that Debbie Pelt was not always a crazy whore.
He refuses to take Sookie to see Russell Edinson.
Sookie she likes to get in on the danger, doesn't she?
She's
not one to hold back. Eric arrives at the mansion looking for Bill, and Talbot is quite taken with him, isn't he?
Yeah, he's... I believe he's eyeing him up.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he seems impressed.
Why not?
Eric tells Russell and Talbot that Bill is wanted for selling V.
Bullshit.
And the King calls his bluff by revealing that Bill has pledged his allegiance to Mississippi and they know all the details of Sophie Ann's V selling plot.
Bill tells Eric that he's there of his own accord and that Sookie is no longer his human, which Eric looks quite pleased about.
I believe Talbot said he's not missing and he's way too square to deal V, which is spot on, isn't it, really?
Hitting the nail on the head, yeah.
Spot on.
Eric is quite quick to change his allegiance at that point, isn't he? And, he goes over to the dark side as well. He explains that he's only doing what is necessary to protect Pam from the Magister's wrath.
It didn't take him long to change his ways, did it?
Switch sides. Oh, okay.
And they seem quite sympathetic with him when he says that.
Yeah, it seems like your child being in danger is quite a crucial thing for a vampire.
It appears that Russell despises the Magister, and he asks Eric to stay the night.
So,
which Talbot seemed quite happy about.
Yeah. is that a death warrant on the Magister then?
I think there's going to be some Magister arse kicking happening.
Yeah, there's
going to
be
some
a
point.
Fang off between the Magister.
Fang off. that's nice.
Meanwhile, Sookie is awakened by Debbie and Alcide arguing. Debbie in a, she looked like she was wearing boxer shorts and a corset. Some bad outfit.
That was a bad outfit. She's furious to see Sookie there and assumes that she and Alcide are an item.
Sookie further riles her by reading her mind and saying the names of all the guys she cheated on Alcide with.
Can you remember any of the names?
No.
No, me neither.
Redneck names they were.
Redneck names.
Debbie threatens to fuck Sookie up. Cut her!
Cut her! And Sookie reads her mind to find that she doesn't know where Bill is.
Dead end.
I think she says in her mind something like, who the fuck's this Bill guy, isn't it?
That's probably a bad move because I think Debbie is probably then going to go to Coot and relay this information to Coot.
That could be possible,
I think,
yes.
Yeah.
Franklin, he ties Tara to a bed and repeatedly declares his love for her.
Romantic.
he's a old romantic at heart,
yeah,
really, isn't he?
Yeah, of course.
He's a bit jealous when she receives a text message from Lafayette. But... she tells him Lafayette is gay with a little help from his hand around her throat.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And Franklin texts him back.
Trust me, motherfucker. Repeatedly demonstrating to Tara how fast he is capable of typing the text. That was awesome. he's He's my new favourite character, for sure.
Watch how fast I can type, motherfucker. Yeah, that's great.
Despite the insane situation, she's able to laugh at Franklin. So obviously, despite all this, she's still got some sort of weird attraction to him, I think.
Is she laughing out of joy or just laughing out of pure insanity? Of the situation that she's caught in.
It was genuinely cool the way he could type it fast.
That is awesome, isn't it? That is awesome.
Back in daytime,
Kevin and Kenya are shocked by the arrival of Jason Stackhouse for work as a police officer.
Not your first choice for a police cadet, surely.
No. Andy refuses to let Jason work crime scenes immediately and gives him desk work, insisting that he learns the ropes.
That's probably a wise move. Hey, do the cops again are reminding me of the cops in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, definitely.
Any police station scenes just always make me think of those scenes in Twin
Especially
Peaks.
Especially Kevin, he looks like...
Kevin looks like and talks like Andy from Twin Peaks.
He does.
And the Rosie, the receptionist, talks like... I can't remember the receptionist's name in Twin Peaks. 10 points if you can remember.
Yeah, 10 points if you can remember. No,
I can't remember the receptionist in Twin Peaks. But yeah, no, they're very similar.
And that was a great paperclip chain that Jason made, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's using his time wisely. Sam helps his family move into their new house and is alarmed by the friction between his brother and father. Warning bells should be ringing, Sam. You should not have got involved.
Yeah, you should have left that well alone.
Yeah.
Across the road, Terry is moving into Arlene's. Terry is moved, I would say, by his development in his life. To such an extent that he ends up having a prolonged hug with Sam and crying tears of joy.
Oh, it's all going to go wrong, isn't it?
I hope it doesn't.
I hope it doesn't. Terry. Poor Terry.
Terry's just truly happy now, isn't he?
Yeah, even though he's got the prospect of Arlene and two kids running around in a bit of a shithole of a house.
He doesn't care, he's just...
He just wants to be normal.
He's just doing the stuff that normal people do.
Oh, God bless him.
Sam offers Jolie work as a maintenance man for his tenants.
And a lazy bastard reluctantly agrees. He doesn't seem like he...
No.
He seems a bit work-shy, doesn't he?
It's like something about his bad back.
My back.
But no excuses, do some work.
And Tommy also starts his new job at Malotte's.
Well, I think he's going to have some fun working at Malotte's.
Yeah, there's probably going to be some deaths there. There normally is. While the vampires are sleeping, Tara is quite enterprising and she manages to untie her bonds and escape from the mansion. But she's caught by Coop. That was a good scene, wasn't it, when she was running across the grass. That was a really good werewolf transition.
That was a good werewolf. Real wolves.
Real wolves.
We bang on about the real wolves, but I think they make the difference.
Yeah, with the anti-CGI movement here.
And then Franklin is devastated and he cries like a big baby.
I watched the episode twice, so both times that was the thing that I laughed the most at. That was some awesome crying.
He looked truly, truly gutted, or would you say just truly insane?
Both. Oh, how do you think they make the vampires cry blood? Because I always wonder that. Maybe it's best that
it's
we don't
real.
Know.
It's real.
It's real. Yeah, that's real. It. It's real. Though. They're real vampires.
Tara apologises and comforts him.
Later, Franklin finds Tara crying over the fact that she is starving, and Talbot has given her a plate of lilies to eat.
Yeah, I like that when
practical.
I like that when she started saying to Franklin about, you need to, you know, look after me and I need feeding.
Yeah, look after your human.
Yeah, look after your human.
She assures him that she wants to be with him. Yeah, right. And he announces that he intends to make her his vampire bride and turn her the following night.
Yes.
Is that going to happen? Tara vampire? Can you see it coming?
Oh, I don't know.
Nah.
It'd be interesting, but...
No. Like we said before, the eternity of Tara.
Eternity of moaning.
No.
No. Okay. Tommy and Lafayette smoke cigars. Or were they blunts?
I watched it again, and the first time I thought, no, they're smoking blunts. But then I watched it again, and I think they are real names of brands of cigars.
They truly are cigars.
Yeah, they are real cigars.
Because Tommy didn't seem too impressed with it.
But surely
if it was a blunt...
If they were big blunts, then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Jesus shows up and asks Lafayette on a date.
Lafayette is initially defensive and wary, but then he's moved that someone that's so nice and normal would seek him out in this way. Jesus says that he'll stay all day in Malotte's until Lafayette finishes his shift.
Oh, so cute.
That'd
make a nice couple.
He's really nice, isn't he? Do you think there's something weird going on there?
No, I think this could be the normal. This could be just a A bit of normalness.
Do you think so?
Normalness? I don't think that's...
Normality.
I don't think that's a real word.
Normality.
But yeah, normality.
You don't think that he's going to turn out to be some sort of demon or something?
No. But it's someone true from, blood, it could happen.
Someone from the FBI who's going to... He's working undercover, he's going to bust Lafayette for drugs. Maybe. I don't know.
No.
Because it's true blood, I think, no, this is too good to be
that's
true.
That's what I mean. It's something normal going on that's happy and nice and...
We feel like how Lafayette's feeling, like, no way. No way is this for real.
Okay, so Suki and Alcide, they meet with Colonel John Flood, who is the Alpha Wolf Packmaster.
Yeah, he's really cool in the book, so I was kind of a bit gutted that they made...
Was disappointed?
Disappointed they made him a pussy.
He did seem like a bit of a pussy, but...
he's cool in the books.
But he was keeping face. He didn't show them that he's a pussy. It's just that we could...
just the Suki.
Hear his thoughts.
Read his thoughts, yeah.
They tell him about the werewolves drinking Russell's blood. Flood reveals that Russell is ancient and that werewolves have served him for centuries all over the world.
Wow. So this is obviously not common knowledge amongst the werewolves. This is just something that the high-ranking alpha wolves know
about.
Yeah. Interesting.
Suki reads the colonel's mind and finds out that he's terrified of Russell and the other pack.
So can't rely on any help from the good werewolf pack.
No.
I can't remember the name. Alcide's werewolf pack has got a cool name that I really can't remember. I'll rack my brains. It'll come to you.
It comes to you. Andy Bellefleur makes Jason wash the police cars. Jason was looking for something more substantial to do.
Yeah.
And Andy said, I've got just a job for you.
Yeah, shirtless car washing,
and
that is just a job for
Jason. For the ladies, there was a bit of, as you just said, a bit of shirtless car washing.
Jason spies Crystal Norris, the girl from Hotshot, driving past, and takes one of the squad cars and pulls her over. Shirtless and wet, he tries to get her name and number, but she's evasive and coy.
Eventually, she gives her name and says she doesn't have a phone. But Jason asks her on a date to Malotte's that evening.
Why is she so reluctant? God, it's...
I don't know, she seemed a bit of a strange one, really.
Yeah, there's something weird going
there's
on
something
there.
Something very weird going on.
I know what's going on there.
You know?
But...
you know? Is this the same as the books? Or is this...
Well,
is this
no, in the books, Jason knows the weirdness already, I think. Jason, yeah.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, no, there's some weirdness going on, but Jason's aware of the weirdness.
Is this a new kind of weirdness, or kind of...
I'm assuming it's going to be the same weirdness.
Is this a weirdness that we've seen before, or is this a,
no, this
a
is some
new weirdness?
This is some different weirdness.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ooh,
the crystal, like I said before in a previous podcast, the crystal meth dealing side of it is new, but the weird little town with some really fucked up shit going on, that's the same as the books.
Oh, it's sounding promising, isn't it?
I'm sure we'll find out soon.
At Malotte's, Jessica asks Arlene why she won't look her in the eye. And tell me, Natalie, what does Arlene reply? in your finest Arlene accent, please.
I do not care to be hypnotised, which is apparently what you Walking Dead people like to do.
Yeah.
I apologise to any Southerners.
That's
possible.
Good.
No training.
So, obviously, Jessica...
Jessica's quite upset.
She's a bit put out by that. So, in her response, she glamoured the next couple that came in and told them not to tip Arlene.
She's having some fun with being a vampire. But then Hoyt arrives with Summer, a wholesome, naive girl. Did you think she looked like a midget?
She did look like, yeah.
I'm sure she's probably not that small, but next to Hoyt, she looked tiny. She looked like a child.
She looked like an extra from Willow. She looked a bit odd.
Summer talks endlessly about having babies.
Yeah, after a couple of years.
God, yeah.
Yeah.
Hoyt's mum would really like her, I think.
Oh, she's perfect.
Yeah.
Jessica is distraught at the sight of Hoyt with someone else, but Tommy is surprised that she was ever with Hoyt and tells her that, as a smoking hot vampire, she is way out of Hoyt's league.
Tommy said...
Hoyt's way out of her league, I think, is what I meant to say.
No. Yeah, she's out of Hoyt's league.
Yeah, because he's way out of her league. She's in the higher league.
She's in a higher league, yeah.
Yeah, Tommy
disses Hoyt. He says, he looks like he got bombed by radiation on his way to middle school. That's a giant sixth grade boy over there.
Yeah, brilliant.
That's, yeah.
Tommy appears to be about to make some moves on Jessica, but Jolie calls the bar in a furious rage and demands he comes home.
Tommy.
refuses.
Joe Lee, what a bastard.
Yeah.
I was warming to him initially with his dirty pants and his long hair.
There was no pants action in this episode.
No,
so
I'm missing the pants. He's cool. Obviously, clothes make him more angsty. Russell shows Bill the file on Suki and asks why he circled certain names on the Stackhouse family tree. Bill denies all knowledge and says that Franklin is lying and that he's never seen the file before. Bullshit.
I don't know. He seemed quite sincere, but then...
What's your take on it? Because I know what's going on, so...
I actually believe Bill when he said he didn't know about it, but...
You believe Bill?
I did, but maybe he glamoured me. I don't know. I did believe him, but then, yeah.
You think it's too far-fetched that Bill would have a secret file on his girlfriend?
I don't know. Bill's lied so much in this season regarding trying to keep people safe and...
He's lied in other seasons as well.
Yeah, he's believable. I hope it's not Bill's file and there's something
else. You hope
else.
Someone's planted it there?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Anyway, Russell tells Bill his theory that telepathy runs in Suki's family, and so Bill is trying to track the origin of the power for some unknown payoff. It's an interesting theory,
that
Russell.
That is an interesting theory.
Bill continues to vehemently deny this, and a disbelieving Russell has him taken away by guards and locked in his room. It's all going a bit wrong for Bill yet again.
It is going a bit wrong. Okay, Andy sees Jason in Malotte's and tells him that all he has to do to become a deputy is to do the physical exam and the written test.
But Jason is concerned that he won't pass the written. Yeah, I'm concerned for you too, Jason.
I am concerned for him. I am concerned.
Lafayette finally finishes his shift and enjoys an evening playing pool and hanging out with Jesus.
Aww, that was nice.
Normal.
Normal. It seems too...
Too normal.
Okay, Tommy asks Sam if he can stay the night with him. Tommy promises to tell his parents, but Sam doesn't believe him and wants to know the truth about what is going on in the Mickens family. But Tommy continues to be evasive.
Later that night, Sam and Tommy are chilling out with a beer and a nature documentary when Jolie turns up drunk and violent and threatens them.
Sam tells Jolie that he'll throw them out of their new house if he doesn't leave. And Jolie calms down and leaves.
Telling Tommy that he has to learn responsibility.
Yeah.
Did you think it was funny that they were watching a nature documentary?
Yeah.
Because I was wondering, because they were looking at cheetahs, so would that... By watching the documentary, would they then be able to shift into cheetahs? Because I think it's the rules of the shapeshifters that they have to see the animal.
I find that see the animal in the flesh, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm not sure about. I think in the books it just has to be a picture, but I know that I'm pretty sure in the show Sam has to see it in the flesh.
Yeah.
Maybe the writers should clarify.
Otherwise, there'd be all sorts of mythical beasts.
You could turn
around,
into a unicorn.
Yeah.
A dinosaur. Watch Jurassic Park and turn into a dinosaur. Anyway, Coot goes to Bill's room and taunts him, telling that Suki is fucking a werewolf.
Bill beats the shit out of Coot, demanding to know where Suki is, then throws him into the antique bed, smashing it to pieces.
The guard hears the commotion and enters the room, only for Bill to hold his face against the silver door until it dissolves.
It proper melted to the door, didn't it?
That was awesome. That was a really good fight.
Bill makes his escape to find Suki.
I should mention that Stephen Moyer, in the break between the seasons, he did some boxing training with Amir Khan's trainer.
Did he?
Yeah. He also trained Mickey Rourke, I do believe. So that's how he got his vampire fighting moves.
That is good information. Eric is concerned for Pam.
No, Jason.
Sorry. Jason finds that Crystal has been waiting outside Malotte's, too nervous to enter. They go to make out in the woods, and she tells him that she has a huge secret and they have no future together.
Jason tells her that he doesn't care, but she insists that he wouldn't want anything to do with her if he found out.
That's weird, isn't it?
That is weird. What is going on there?
I didn't really know what was going on there.
You still don't know, do you?
I haven't got...
No, it's not something...
I haven't really got a clue.
It's not something you could guess.
I don't know what I was thinking. I can't even tell you now, because... No.
Whatever you guess, it won't be right.
Really?
Really.
But this is a book thing as well.
This is a book thing. I'm pretty sure they're going the same way as the books with this. Yeah.
Okay. Eric is concerned for Pam and asks Russell to act. But Russell says he has matters to attend to and asks that Talbot give Eric a tour of the house.
Talbot is obviously delighted to spend some quality time alone with Eric.
Yeah.
We see an ancient portrait of Talbot and Russell on the wall in the hallway, which was good, wasn't it?
Oh, that's excellent.
But how old do you think that was? What were they like? It was like, I don't know, Elizabethan period costumes they looked? I'm not sure. I'm not an expert.
It's got a few hundred years old,
isn't it? It's got a few hundred, yeah. A good 500, no, well, 400 years old, maybe? I don't know. But on the links, we'll put a link to a screenshot of that painting, if you want to have a look at it again.
So Talbot shows ancient vampire erotica to him, and they flirt with each other.
Do you think Eric was flirting back? Because like I mentioned before, Eric does like a bit of man action in the books.
It did seem that there was a bit of, yeah.
So I'm wondering if Eric is swinging both ways in the show as well.
I'm thinking he could be. Eric then spies a Viking crown, which triggers a memory from his distant past.
We see Eric, as a human, was a Viking prince. While at home with his parents and baby sister, his father chastises him for chasing women and not living up to his responsibilities as royalty.
Eric is angry and goes to have sex with a servant in the stables.
So he's not changed much in the last 1,000 years.
Good old Eric.
While he is gone, werewolves murder his family.
Ah, bad Eric.
When he kills one, it turns back into his human form, and Eric sees the wolf's hook pack symbol branded onto him.
That's really good, that bit, wasn't it?
That was awesome. I love the flashbacks.
Yeah, the flashbacks. I'm enjoying the flashbacks.
That looked like the movie Beowulf, didn't it?
Yes. Yeah, same sort of setting. Yeah. A wolf flees, and Eric sees a cloaked figure.
Russell, we assume.
Yes.
Who requests that the wolf steals his father's crown. In his dying breath, Eric's father makes him swear vengeance.
Yeah.
So is that it? So for the last 1,100 years, Eric has been searching the earth for Russell, who is responsible for killing his family. Wow, this is Shakespearean, my God.
And now he's sleeping in his house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. So do you see Eric and Bill maybe teaming up?
Yeah.
Uniting against a common enemy?
I think so.
Yeah. That's interesting that Eric in his human life was a figure of authority that slept with lots of women and did lots of fighting and killed lots of people, which is kind of the same as now, isn't it?
He's not really changed, is he?
It probably wasn't a big leap for him to become a vampire, is what I'm saying.
No. He's probably enjoying the benefits of being a vampire, that he can do the stuff he likes a lot longer.
Yeah, exactly.
Sookie is awakened by Alcide calling her. She emerges from her room to find Bill in the apartment.
She's overwhelmed with joy at seeing him, despite the terrible things he said to her in his phone call.
He cuts her short by saying that she has to escape from Jackson immediately.
She begs him to come too, but he tells her there's no hope for him.
Just then, Coot breaks down the door and invites Russell and one of his guards into the apartment.
The guard pins Bill to the wall, Coot takes out Alcide and then goes for Sookie. Sookie throws Coot across the room with the magic light from her hand!
The magic light from her hand.
That was awesome.
Bill and Sookie are both astounded at this display of her powers, and Russell laughs with delight and declares this new discovery to be
fantastic! That was amazing. What a scene.
So,
A couple of things that the fans have been discussing about this scene. One of them is that, how was it that Coot was allowed to invite the vampires into the apartment? Because it's not his apartment. It's supposed to be that someone that lives in the home is supposed to be able to invite vampires in. But then the two sort of theories are either because it's a werewolf's apartment.
They've been there before.
Because Coot's been there before and may have probably slept there if he slept there with Debbie.
Yeah.
Maybe that changed the rules. Or maybe it's because it's the apartment of a werewolf, then the rules are not as strict as if it was a human's apartment, perhaps.
That makes good sense.
Also, there's been debate amongst fans about whether or not it's Bill's fault that they were there, because some fans have been saying, oh, if Bill hadn't have gone to Sookie, if Bill hadn't escaped and gone to Sookie, he wouldn't have been followed. But also, I think probably Coot could have just told Russell where Alcide lived anyway. Because obviously Debbie's gone to Coot and said, alright, this girl Sookie and Alcide, they saw what happened at the pack meeting, and now they're looking for this guy called Bill Compton. What's all that about?
Okay.
And then Coot obviously went to Russell and relayed this information and said where Sookie is, and Russell obviously is intent on finding Sookie now that he knows that Sookie is important to Sophie Anne in some way.
Yes. I think. I'm liking...
That's your, my take on events.
I'm liking your take on events. So, we like that episode. Do we like that episode?
Yeah, that was a great episode.
Yeah, there's a lot happening, wasn't there?
As always.
All the characters are covered as always.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we didn't get any Pam this episode. That was the only failing for me. No Pam.
No, but a great episode. So
let's quickly recap the music.
Okay, so first up, Sonny Ellis. I got more bills than I can pay, which was
the blues music. The
blues music when Jason was at work. That's a good song. I like that.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed that. And we had some more Jace Everett. Jace Everett, of course, performs a theme tune to True Blood, Bad Things. And his song Damned If I Do was played in Malotte's while Lafayette and Jesus were playing Paul.
And that song is featured on Jace Everett's album Red Revelations.
Which
and
is very good.
Yeah, good album.
We recommend it.
Well done. Well done, Jace.
Yeah, we'd like to go. When he played England recently, he had a broken hand. So, but we didn't get tickets anyway, but it would have been disappointing to go and he wasn't able to play guitar, I think.
So, next time.
Next time he comes over.
Next time, we'll do a bit of Jace Everett stage diving.
Yeah. there was also a band called the Honeycombs. Their song Little Moon was played while Jason and Crystal were together. And they're a contemporary alternative folk act.
And then we have American singer-songwriter from the 60s, Jackie DeShannon, with a song called Trouble, which is the title of the episode and featured in the closing credits.
That was a good song. I enjoyed that.
That was a great song. So now it's time for our
What the Fuck of the Week. What the Fuck of the Week is...
Sookie's glowing hand.
Sookie's superpower.
Wow. That was something else, wasn't it?
That was.
Do you know where that's going?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you do?
I know exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You know everything.
I know exactly where that's going. As somebody that doesn't know where it's going, what would your guess be? Would you have any clue whatsoever?
I believe Sookie is a goddess.
A goddess.
And that is...
A superhero.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going for goddess.
I won't say what Sookie is, but
no, please don't.
I won't. But in the book, she doesn't have the glowing hand thing.
Oh,
but it's still the same way. It's the same direction that they're going in, I believe. How many times have we seen? This is the third time.
Third time. When she grabbed Marianne.
When she grabbed Marianne in season 2.
Yeah.
Episode 10.
Really?
Yeah, it was episode 10.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Was it episode 11? Anyway, and then, in the finale, didn't she push over the big meat statue?
Oh yeah.
She used her glowing hands on the meat statue, didn't she?
She did, yeah.
Am I imagining that?
No. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I'm hoping. Yeah.
So this is the third time we believe that we've seen the glowing hand. But is
she going to know where to take it?
It's not really clear how much control she has over it at this point, is it?
It's just when she's angry or in need of strength.
If she's in mortal danger, it's the glowing hand makes an appearance.
But yeah, Russell was quite delighted with that, wasn't he?
And also earlier in this episode, Talbot said something to Eric about Russell. He collects things, but he kind of collects people as well. So does this mean he wants Sookie as part of some sort of weird freak menagerie?
I think so. He just wants complete power.
Yeah.
So.
And he knows that if Sophie Anne wants Sookie, then there must be... Well, that's what he's assuming. That Sophie Anne wants Sookie for some purpose.
Yeah, it's going to be good, isn't it?
It's interesting.
Is it... Because you know what it is from the books, is it...
I think it's been dealt with better in the show.
Oh,
this, and I think there's more kind of mystery and intrigue surrounding Sookie in the show, the way they've presented it. Should we move on now to the line of the week?
Yes.
Here's the line of the week. And the line of the week is...
Don't say that. We women say that. Everything goes black and I wake up surrounded by body parts.
Franklin. A classic from Franklin. Do you think that's going to be Tara's fate?
Being body parts?
Yeah. Is it too early to kill her off?
I don't know.
Will this entire experience make her a more interesting character? Because I got bored of her in season
She's
two.
She's getting more interesting.
She's getting more interesting. I got bored of her in season two with Mary Ann and Eggs.
She started off boring at the start of this season, but...
But now, yeah, no, Franklin...
For the first episode or two, but...
The presence of Franklin has injected new life into her character, I think.
So, shall we do some news?
News. Okay, let's start with some viewing figures. Apologies for last week when Google failed us and we were unable to come up with the goods. We've got the new figures for you now.
We have got goods for you this week. So, this week's figures was 4.86 million.
And last week's figures were 4.68 million. So it's climbing.
Ratings are climbing. It looks like the head-spinning sex generated some publicity for the show.
I did notice that, yeah, after...
Was that a peaking episode?
It's always that the first episode of the season has the high, and the last episode have the highest viewing figures. But from episode two onwards, it's been climbing. But I think particularly with all the press that episode three generated, we've seen a definite jump in the viewing figures. And also I think it's important to remember that a lot of people that subscribe to True Blood, they get quite a few friends around and have kind of True Blood parties and watch it. So the true viewing figures are much higher. And also if you consider all the people who might be downloading it illegally. Anyway, let's move on to Comic-Con.
Comic-Con.
The cast of True Blood will be at Comic-Con in San Diego this week.
Who'll be there, Matt? Who'll be there?
Attending the panel will be... Alan Ball, Stephen Moyer, Anna Paquin, Ellis, Sam Trammell, Rutina Wesley, Deborah Ann Ward, Kristen Bauer, Dennis O'Hare, and Joe Manganiello. For those of you lucky enough to get tickets to this legendary geek fest, they will be answering questions on Friday the 23rd at 5:15 p.m.
That sounds like the place to be.
Wow, I think since Lost has finished, the True Blood's going to be the big thing at Comic-Con.
Okay, this is some good news. Okay, issue one of the True Blood spin-off comic hits the stores today. And I believe today's date is the 21st of July.
Yep, today's the 21st of July, so it's probably later than that if you're listening.
So there will be six issues, and the plot was developed by Alan Ball and the series writers Elizabeth Finch and Kate Barnard.
And they're illustrated by David Messina, who was responsible for the recent Star Trek movie adaptation comics, which looked really good. And I think he's a good choice because looking at his Star Trek illustrations, he looks like he's good at capturing film in comic form, if you see what I mean. The likenesses of the Star Trek characters were very exact. According to HBO's press release, in the first storyline, Sookie and the rest of Bontomp find themselves waiting in Malott's bar for a strangely portentous raging storm to subside. Soon they discover they've been trapped by an entity that feeds off raw emotions and begins killing off the patrons one by one until his hunger is sated.
I've got to get myself one of these comics.
Yeah, I pre-ordered. If you happen to be in the UK, I ordered from a place called Disposable Heroes Comics, which was the only place I could find that was stocking them. And I think it was like $2.99 for the first issue.
Do they not deliver to like rest of the world or only UK?
I think Europe. I think they deliver to Europe. But it's easy. I mean, in America you can get off the HBO store. But the UK HBO store doesn't stock it, which is annoying.
Okay.
Anyway, some gossipy news now.
It appears that Jennifer Aniston has been in the headlines with her relationship with an actor named Christopher Gartin, who True Blood fans will remember from season two, in which he played Hugo, Sookie's accomplice in infiltrating the Fellowship of the Sun. He turned out to be a double agent.
Did you recognise him in the yes. paper? Did you see him and think, oh, it's Hugo? I didn't.
No,
I thought it was funny that it described him as True Blood star. And I read that and I thought, True Blood star Christopher Gartin? Who? I don't remember him.
he was double agent.
in other vampire-related news, apologies for... mentioning this, I know this is a sore subject, Paul. The new Twilight movie, Eclipse, has set a new record for biggest midnight opening in the United States and Canada in box office history.
Midnight opening. That's late for a lot of little 8 and 9 year old girls, isn't it?
Grossed an estimated $30 million in over 4,000 theatres.
Really?
Eclipse is directed by David Slade, the man behind another recent vampire success, 30 Days of Night, which we ordered on DVD.
Damn you, Play.com.
Play.com. You suck. How long have you waited?
It's been a week. It's been one week.
So yeah, we were going to watch 30 Days of Night as part of our research for the show, but we were unable to.
We decided to do a new segment for the show in which we discuss just random vampire-related films.
Yeah.
Whether they're big films or B-movies. So if you've got any favourite vampire-related films, you can tell
or
us
TV
about.
TV shows. But the new Twilight film, this is the third director that the Twilight series has had so far, a different director for each film. And David Slade, I read an interview with him in Sci-Fi Now magazine, which is an excellent publication that I recommend to any True Blood fan.
No, there's a lot of, it sounds like a lot of product placement going on, Sci-Fi Now, Play.com.
Sci-Fi Now is the shit, it's an awesome magazine. David Slade said to them that he's going to be, for the third Twilight movie, he's going to be moving away from the first-person perspective of the novel, much like Alan Ball's approach to adapting the True Blood novels, I thought.
So David Slade could make...
He could make it
better. Twilight a good film.
Maybe. He's not got great source material, though, has he?
Not really.
Apologies, Twilight.
Sparkly. Okay, a trailer has been released for Let Me In. An English language remake of cult Swedish vampire movie Let the Right One In.
What a movie.
The Swedish movie is awesome.
It's unbeatable. I mean, watch it.
It's unbeatable, but if you watch the trailer for the new one, it just looks like the old one.
It truly does, doesn't it? What a pointless remake.
Yeah, pointless remake. Fucking pointless remake. Yeah.
And it's an excellent book as well. Read the book and watch the film. And, I mean... It's just for lazy people that can't be bothered to change the subtitles to dubbing on their DVD of Let the Right One In, isn't it? Just do that. Don't see some American remake.
It looks like the same movie set.
It looks like the same set. It looks like the same actors. The kids look exactly the same.
Are they just lying? Are they just re-releasing the same film?
But with some American dubbing over it. Yeah. No. Pointless. Pointless.
So I believe that is it, isn't it?
That is it for this week.
But now... Now it's time for spoilers, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Tune out if you don't want to hear some spoilers. Spoiler! Okay, here's our spoilers for next week's episode. Spurned by Eric, Sookie fears the worst for Bill, whose fate now lies in Lorena's hands.
Fueled by a night of bloody passion, Tara executes a desperate plan to stave off Franklin's advances.
In Bontemps, Tommy finds it difficult to leave the family nest. Jessica gets her fix from a Malotte's customer, and Jason's romance with Crystal hits a snag, as does Lafayette's with Jesus.
After revealing his master plan to Eric, Russell pays a visit to Louisiana in order to start executing it.
Wow. Executing who?
Executing who? Is it going to be some magister ass kickings?
There's going to be death coming up soon, surely. It's about time we had a mass slaughter, I think.
Oh, that's...
Always a big death count in True Blood.
Do you think each episode it is getting more exciting as it's going on? It truly is.
It's building to like a crescendo, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. So...
We've got a few links for you we're going to put on the site. I'll put a still of the painting of Russell and Talbot from their hallway.
You can read the first 10 pages of the comic.
Which, I think that's at MTV's site. But we'll put the link. Yeah, it looks good. It looks good. I can't wait. And we'll put the trailer there for Let Me In, just so you can see for yourself the shameful remake.
Yes. But we'll still see it, though, won't
we? We'll watch it anyway, for research.
Yes, research. So have a nice week, and thank you for listening. And
good night.
Good night.